Well, it's a great privilege to be back here at Malvern. I've made many retreats here as a junior legionary, and it's a great privilege to be here. I was here 10 years ago to give the Malvern retreat to the Legion, and I'm happy to be back for the 25th anniversary of the Legion's retreat here at Malvern. I think this year in particular is going to be a very grace-filled year, a very grace-filled retreat, because it's the Jubilee year, and God is bestowing many graces upon the world and upon the church during this special Jubilee year. Many people are coming back to the sacraments, converting to the church, and the Legion is growing in many parts of the world. I think this retreat will also be special since it is the 25th anniversary of the Legion here at Malvern. And plus, it's also the 20th anniversary of Frank Duff's passing into eternal life. How many of you were here on November 7th, 1980, when we got the news that Frank Duff had died? Do you remember that? So some of you are here. I'll never forget that. I remember we then prayed for him during the rest of the retreat. So when I was here 10 years ago, I was just a little baby priest. I was only 6 months a priest. So I just recently celebrated my 10th anniversary just back in May. So I had the privilege of going to Fatima and saying Mass in the chapel where Our Lady appeared, and I was able to be there on my anniversary. Yeah, there's a story of two brothers from a little village in Ireland. And these brothers were holy terrors. They always drove their cars fast through the street, and they always drank too much and hung out in the bars, and they never went to church. They drove everybody crazy, especially the pastor, Father Murphy. And eventually the brothers grew up, and one of them passed away. And so the other brother goes to Father Murphy and says, "Father, will you say a little Mass for my brother for his funeral?" The priest says, "Sure, I'd be happy to do that. By all means, he needed the prayers, that's for sure." But then the brother says, "Father, I have this very generous gift of $50,000 I want to give to the church on one condition." And Father says, "What's the condition?" And the brother says, "You have to say during the funeral homily that my brother was a saint." Well, Father didn't want to do it because he knew that these fellows were just terrible Catholics. But he also knew the church needed a new roof and the school needed an addition. And so he said, "Okay, I'll see what I can do." So, of course, he took the money, and so then during the funeral homily, he says, "We've come here today to pray for the happy repose of this fellow here who, he was a very bad person. He never went to church. He hung out in the bars all the time. He drove us all crazy. But compared to his brother, he was a saint." So compared to his brother, he was a saint, I imagine. The reason why I mention this story is because we're going to be talking a lot about Legion saints and future Legion saints during this weekend. What I want to do during today's talk is to tell a little bit about the life of Frank Duff, Edel Quinn, and Alfie Lamb. What I want to do is talk a little bit about their personalities, their natural qualities, and their personality types, and then mention the four aspects of their interior life, their spiritual life, that I believe we can imitate. And those four qualities would be their prayer life, their love for the Eucharist, their devotion to Our Lady, the crosses that they carried so well, and number four, their zeal for souls, their desire to help convert sinners. So I first want to look at the natural qualities and sort of some of the interests and personality types of these great future Legion saints. There's a saying that grace builds on nature, and so we should look at their natural qualities first before we see how God's grace built upon that. Some of you might have studied a little bit about the four temperaments. They might know about the four temperaments. Okay, what are they? Choleric, sanguine, anybody know the others? Phlegmatic and melancholic. It's interesting, Frank Duff was a choleric, Edel Quinn was a sanguine, and Alfie Lamb was a phlegmatic. So all we need is one of you to become a melancholic saint, and we'll be all set. Now, a choleric temperament, in fact, one author said you can compare four different animals to the four different personality types. The choleric would be the lion, because the choleric was somebody who by nature is very much of a leader, a type A personality, a workaholic, somebody that can get great things done, but they also can suffer from having a temper, from getting impatient and angry easily. And that was Frank Duff. He was a choleric, and he had the great qualities that made him such a tremendous leader. Edelquin was a sanguine, which a sanguine is in the animal world, that would be an otter. You know, the otters love to play, they love to socialize, they love to have fun. Then there is the phlegmatic, and that would be the golden retriever. Okay, the golden retriever is somebody that's sort of shy and patient, sensitive, a good listener, but also somebody that is always reliable, very steady. And then there is the melancholic, which would be what we call the beaver personality. The melancholic would be somebody who would be very, very much of a busy person, very detailed, orderly, scheduled, musical, philosophical. So those are the personality types, the lion, the otter, the beaver, and the golden retriever. So Frank Duff, we're going to begin with him. He was born on June 7th, 1889. He lived to be 91 years old. He died on November 7th, 1980. And we know by his very nature, he was a genius. He was incredibly brilliant. He had a photographic memory. He even invented a system of calculus that was eventually adopted by the British government. He also was a mechanical genius. When he was riding his bike one day, he felt that the gears weren't working too well, so he redesigned the gears, sent it to Raleigh, and Raleigh adopted his gear system. We also know that he was quite an athlete. He was only 5'6", but he was incredibly wiry and tough, and he excelled in tennis, cricket, running track, and swimming. He even ran a marathon, and he came in second in all of Ireland, even though he had never trained for it. He had a superhuman strength. Director Aaron Don Taggart, who's here today, he tells a story of when, back in the 1960s, when Frank Duff was 70 years old, they were over in the Conchillion, and they were showing some slides, and Frank Duff picked up a table, put it over his head, and carried it across the room and put it down. Well, then Don went over to feel the weight of that table was made of solid oak. Very heavy, and yet Frank Duff lifted it up and carried it away. And other times, Frank Duff was attacked by men of the street. One occasion, a drunken sailor came up and tried to stab Frank Duff, and Frank Duff moved out of the way, and then he belted the fella. And later on, Frank Duff said he would have done Muhammad Ali proud. Frank Duff loved nature. He loved scenery. He loved bicycling around Ireland. He had a bicycling group which he called the Sprockets. Isn't that a great name? He loved photography, taking pictures of the scenery in Ireland. He loved Irish music and singing, and especially Irish humor. He read Time magazine every week. He read every Agatha Christie novel that she wrote. And he also had much fascination with space and the solar system. As you know, he was a civil servant, and he served the country so well, but he retired early at the age of 45. If he had stayed in politics, many people speculate he would have become the president of Ireland. That's how much of a brilliant person he was. As you know, he never married. He devoted his whole life to serving God and the church, even though he had lots of women who would have loved to marry him, including some of his secretaries. And one day, Frank Duff was asked, why don't you ever get married? He says, why should I make one woman miserable when I can keep a half a dozen waiting in hopeful expectation? I mentioned he was brilliant. He was an avid reader. He really put to memory a great part of sacred scripture. He studied the lives of the saints, and he was brilliant in church history. Some of his favorite authors were Father Faber and Cardinal Newman. And he himself became, I believe, a great theologian, and hopefully he'll be a doctor of the church one day. He had incredible power over souls. People that met him would come back to the sacraments and be converted. Once two Mormons knocked on the door. These were fallen away Catholics who had become Mormons, trying to convert Frank Duff. After 2 hours, when they left, they were converted back to the Catholic faith. Also, Frank Duff had many skirmishes with the devil. I'm sure you're well aware of that. One day my dad was having breakfast with him, and Frank Duff had come down wearing a patch over his on his forehead, and my dad asked him what happened. Frank Duff said he was trimming his hair, and all of a sudden he felt somebody push his, an invisible force pushed his arm to try to perhaps get his good ear, because as you know, he had loss of hearing in one ear. But there are many times, on another occasion, Frank Duff was walking through his home and a huge mirror ripped off the wall and hurled itself at him. Luckily, he was able to get out of the way. Frank Duff was also known for working miracles. Our own Monsignor Al Norell, as you know, was cured of cancer of the esophagus when Frank Duff placed a relic of the True Cross on Monsignor Norell way back in the 1970s. We also know that Frank Duff cured Nellie Jessup's sister of a terminal illness, and she went on to live 40 years after Frank Duff blessed her with a relic of the True Cross. So this gives you a little insight into the man Frank Duff. And in a few moments, we'll talk a little bit about his spirituality. I want to mention a little bit about Edel Quinn, what we call a sanguine personality, because she was very lively and affectionate, carefree, bubbly, a very attractive person. She had a wonderful natural charm, and she radiated goodness and holiness to everyone that she met. She was totally unselfish. She never refused Our Lady anything. When she was first invited to the Legion meeting, actually she had invited her friend Mona Tierney over for tea, and Mona said, "I can't because I have a Legion of Mary meeting." Edel Quinn says, "What is that?" And so she said she would attend the meeting with Mona. Before the meeting, Mona told the president, "Don't worry about Edel, she's not Legion material." Because nobody expected that this kind of a personality would, her friend thought she would not be Legion material. Now, Edel Quinn was born on September 14th, 1907. She only lived to be 37 years old. She died on May 12th, 1944. Growing up, she loved golfing, tennis, music, and dancing. She had a wonderful sense of humor and also a brilliant intellect. She had leadership qualities. She was the captain of her cricket team in school. She also showed leadership and courage. Many times, I can think of two examples. Once the family heard some noise down in the basement, and Edel Quinn went running down, took a poker from the fireplace, and went down after the burglar, and she came up carrying a cat. Another time when she was in Africa, they ran out of gas, and her Mohammedan driver had to walk miles to get gas, and it was, night had fallen, you could hear the wild animals, and when he came back expecting to find her terrified sitting in the car, there she was doing her correspondence, typing with a typewriter on her lap. So she was totally fearless. We now look at Alfie Lamb for a few moments. He was born on June 24th, 1932. So he's really contemporary to, I'm sure, some of the people born here. Anybody here born in the 1930s? Okay, don't be embarrassed. It's okay. Anybody here born in 1932? Look at that. That's about half a dozen people born the same year as Alfie Lamb. He only lived to be 26 years old. He died on January 21st, feast day of St. Agnes, 1959. As I mentioned, he was what we call the phlegmatic personality, very, very quiet, very shy, reserved, and very sensitive. Growing up, he was pale and of delicate health, and yet a brilliant intellect as well, an avid reader. He also loved music and singing, rabbit hunting, and walking through the countryside with his dog. He shows us, and I'll go talk about him in a moment, but he really shows how the Legion can transform a person from being very quiet and very shy into a wonderful apostle. So I think when we look at their personalities and their temperaments and their natural qualities, we can be encouraged, because no matter what temperament you are, no matter what personality you are, you can become a saint through the Legion. Now I want to mention the four qualities of their spiritual life. Of course, they had many qualities, but I just want to focus on these four. Their prayer life, their devotion to Our Lady, their crosses, and their zeal for souls. When we look first at Frank Duff, we know that his prayer life was primarily focused on the Eucharist and the Holy Mass. He began attending daily Mass in Lent of the year 1914, as a Lenten practice, and he never gave it up. He went to daily Mass until he died in November of 1980. He also spent 1 hour each day before the Blessed Sacrament. He made a daily holy hour. He prayed the Rosary each day. He also prayed the Divine Office in Latin every day, beginning in 1921 until he died in 1980. And it said he never missed a verse of praying the Divine Office. And this is when it took an hour and 45 minutes to say the office back in those days. Well, which is amazing when you think of the fact that he was so involved in the apostolate, and yet he had such a strong interior life and such a strong prayer life. Some of his other spiritual practices include going on pilgrimages to Loch Derg, which they call St. Patrick's Purgatory. He went there for 49 years in a row until he was 74, when the doctor told him he shouldn't go because of his health anymore. He also climbed Crowpatrick, a very steep hill in Ireland, and he climbed it each year in a penitential spirit. Every year he also went on retreat to Mount Mellery Abbey, and he would spend 1 week a year on retreat. And this so made an impression on him that he even put it in the Legion Handbook that every legionary should make an annual retreat. He began his first retreat in 1919, and he never missed until he died in 1980. The very first time he went on retreat, he went with his friend Joe Gabbett. Anybody here familiar with Joe Gabbett? He was sort of a mentor to Frank Duff. And Gabbett was a character. When he went to the abbey, he introduced himself to the abbot and said, "Hello, abbot, I'm Gabbett." And it said that the monks in the whole monastery were chuckling for days when they heard about that. So that gives us a little bit of a glimpse into the interior life of Frank Duff. Daily Mass, daily communion, daily holy hour, rosary, divine office, regular retreats. We look at Edelle Quinn for a few moments now. What was her interior life like? She also had a great love for the Eucharist. In fact, even as a young girl of 13 when she got confirmed, do you know what name she took for her confirmation name? Raise your hand if you know her confirmation name. Okay, few of you do. Eucharia Josephine. Eucharia is the feminine form for Eucharist, just like Eucharist with an IA on the end. Imagine a young girl taking the name Eucharist as her confirmation name, and also Josephine after St. Joseph. So it really gives us a glimpse into her interior life. As a young woman, she took a private vow of virginity to dedicate her whole self to God with the intention of eventually entering the Poor Clares and becoming a Poor Clare nun. We know she was accepted by the Poor Clares in Belfast, but because of her health breakdown, she was unable to enter. But if you understand the nature of a Poor Clare nun, that's a tremendous vocation. It's an entire life of prayer and penance. But she was able and willing to do that. She herself began going to daily Mass at a young age. Every morning she went to 7 o'clock Mass and received communion each day, and she would go immediately to work, so all her breakfast was an apple that she would carry with her and eat it after she went to Mass. But on Sunday, she treated herself to a royal feast of Masses. She attended either the 7 or the 8 o'clock Mass, and then went back home to have breakfast with her family, then came back to church and attended 3 or 4 more Masses, the 9, the 10, the 11, and the 12. And she was just wrapped in prayer before the Blessed Sacrament. She was in love with Christ. That was her spouse. That was her beloved. So she wanted to spend as much time with him as possible. She also would go back Sunday evening for benediction. She once wrote how lonely life would be without the Eucharist. When eventually she joined the Legion, she became a Praetorian member. But she also had great interest in spiritual reading. She loved the saints especially. Anybody know her favorite saint? Saint Therese, the Little Flower, was her favorite saint. And later on in Africa, she followed St. Therese's example and said, "I will never refuse Our Lady anything." And isn't that a good example for all of us? We should never say no to Our Lady. If you're asked to help with something, maybe with extension or setting up a junior group, or if you're asked to take an officership position, always say yes to Our Lady. Never refuse her. We now turn to Alfie Lamb's interior life. He also had a very advanced spiritual life even from a young age. Even at the age of 13, he knew he wanted to become a Christian brother. And he entered the Christian Brothers at the age of 16. At a young age, he began attending daily Mass and daily Holy Communion. He he began doing spiritual reading. Even in the seminary, when people would send him books, there were always books on Our Lady, and he read and loved all those books. When he joined the Legion, he also became a Praetorian member, and every day when he was in South America, he recited the Legion promise by heart after he received Holy Communion. Isn't that a wonderful practice? Sometimes some of us make the promise, and we never even look at it again for years. Or unless somebody else makes a promise, then we sort of follow along when they're reading it. But wouldn't it be a nice practice to maybe once a month, or once a week, or maybe more often, renew your Legion promise on your own? Now we move to the second main quality of their spiritual life, and that was their tender and true devotion to Our Lady. St. Louis de Montfort's true devotion was at the heart and the basis of their spirituality. All of us are very familiar with de Montfort. De Montfort talks about renewing our baptismal vows by consecrating ourselves to Jesus through Mary, then trying to live in union with Mary, trying to do everything in, with, through, and for Mary, and then living in dependence upon Our Lady. And did you know that after you make the consecration, you're not allowed to worry about anything? Did you know that? You're not allowed to worry. It's forbidden. It's contrary to the consecration. You have to trust. You're allowed to pray for things, but you can't worry for things. So when we look at Frank Duff's devotion to Our Lady, we know that he had devotion to Our Lady before he read the True Devotion, but it was just basic catechism knowledge of Our Lady. He overheard somebody talk about de Montfort, and later on he found a copy of the book for a couple pennies down at a used bookstore, and he read it, and he didn't like it. It says he had antipathy for it. He disliked it. He thought it was exaggerated, and he did not accept it. So he told his friend Tom Fallon about it, and Tom said, "You must not have read it carefully enough. Read it again." So Frank Duff read it again. He still did not accept it as true. And he went back, and his friend said, "Read it again." Frank Duff said he had to read it 6 or 7 times before he was given the grace, and he says it was a grace. One day he was reading it, and all of a sudden, he accepted it as true. And from then on, he never turned back. So he was given the grace to accept it, but still he said he was lacking in a proper understanding of Our Lady's role in the Church and in God's plan of salvation. So when he was on a retreat at Mount Mallory, a monk asked him if he would like to borrow a book. And Franco said, "Yes, I want a book about the Blessed Mother." And the monk brought him The Knowledge of Mary by Father Joseph de Concilio. And during the week that Frank Duff was there, he practically hand-copied the entire book because he felt this book was so valuable that he just had to have it. And he knew that monks wouldn't give it to him. He was just at that time he was not well known at all. This is back in the early days, 1919. And so this book of The Knowledge of Mary unlocked the Blessed Mother for Frank Duff, and it gave him the theological basis to more fully understand the true devotion. Well, since that time when Frank Duff had read and began learning more about the Blessed Mother, which was in 1917, which is very important year to remember, that's when the Communist Revolution was taking place, that's when Our Lady was appearing at Fatima, Frank Duff was also growing in his devotion to Our Lady. Since that time, Frank Duff read every book that he could get his hands on about the Blessed Mother in English, French, or Latin. And when we read the Legion Handbook, it's so filled with Marian theology. Really, the handbook is a synthesis of The Knowledge of Mary by Father de Concilio and de Montfort's True Devotion. Frank Duff was really the one who popularized de Montfort's True Devotion and spread it throughout the world through the Legion. We look now at Adele Quinn's devotion to Our Lady. She only discovered the true devotion after she joined the Legion. She made her consecration, which deepened, she said, her spiritual life. And then, for the rest of her life, she lived and practiced and taught this devotion, especially in Africa. Adele Quinn had a special relationship with Our Lady. She never did anything without first invoking Our Lady's name. Whether it be talking to a priest or a bishop or trying to start the Legion, she would always invoke Our Lady's name before she ever acted. She was so wrapped up with Our Lady that one missionary said that Our Lady was her life. When you saw Adele Quinn, you really saw the Blessed Mother living within her. Father Bradshaw tells a story of 3 years before Edelquin died, she was deathly sick, and the nuns thought she was going to die. And when the nun tiptoed in her room in the morning to see if Edelquin was still alive, she was. And Edelquin says, "Sister, you thought I was going to die, didn't you?" And the sister said, "Yes, we did." And Edelquin says, "The Blessed Mother has told me I have 3 more years to work for her." And Edelquin was ecstatic that she would have 3 more years to work, not just 3 years to live, but 3 years to work for Our Lady. That's how much she loved Our Blessed Mother. She lived exactly 3 years, and then she passed into eternity. So the De Montfort spirituality was her spirituality, and her devotion to Our Lady really was formed by her Legion membership. And then we look at Alfie Lamb's devotion to Our Lady. He was devoted to Our Lady even as a young child. He joined her sodality. He was a third order Carmelite. And whenever he could, he read books on the Blessed Mother. He had a special devotion to the Immaculate Conception. He was unfamiliar with the Legion until he was in the seminary when Frank Duff came and spoke in the seminary, and he heard of the Legion there. And then when he had to leave the Christian Brothers because of poor health, he joined the Legion, and that's when he learned about De Montfort and made his consecration, and he spread this all over South America. Now we move to their crosses, what I call the crosses, toils, and disappointments of life. Does that ring a bell with anybody? What were some of the crosses that Frank Duff, Edelquin, and Alfie Lim carried during their lives? Because everyone has a cross. I've never met a person who didn't carry some cross. But remember, the crosses that we carry are blessings in disguise. De Montfort says every cross is filled with diamonds, and that when you get to heaven, you'll thank God on your knees for the crosses he sent you in this life, because these were the things that helped to form us into Christ. What were some of the crosses, toils, and disappointments in the life of Frank Duff, and how did he carry these? Well, one of his crosses was the loss of his family members when they were quite young. A number of his sisters died when they were in infancy or early childhood. The death of Frank Duff's mother really was a very difficult cross for Frank Duff to carry. He was so close with his own mother. One of his crosses was the fact that he had to finish school early. In fact, he finished school around the age of 14, and he was already through Black Rock College at that age, which was equivalent to one of our high schools. And he had to leave school and go to work because his father got sick and had to retire early, so Frank Duff was the sole support for his mother and for the other and for the children. And so Frank Duff had to have this cross of not pursuing higher education, even though on his own he continued to learn and study for his entire life. One of his other crosses was the fact that he could not hear or could hardly hear out of one of his ears because he was hit by a cricket ball when he was a young man, and he lost hearing almost entirely in the one ear. That's why it says in the handbook that we have to give adequate and audible reports. A lot of people don't realize that that's how that originated, okay? It also says that the president has to speak in a tone that rings throughout the room, and that the minutes have to be read loudly. So when you have an understanding of Frank Duff's hearing situation, you know why he always insisted upon these things. Later in life, Frank Duff had a stroke, and he also had heart problems, heart conditions, and also skin cancer. So if anyone has these ailments, they should pray to Frank Duff for healing, for a miraculous healing, or for the grace to carry the cross well. Hearing difficulties, cancer, stroke, or heart problems. His greatest cross, he said, was opposition to the Legion of Mary, because he knew that the Legion was such a valuable tool for saving souls, and it pained him so much when especially bishops and priests were working against that. One of his great crosses also was the fallout after Vatican II. See, before Vatican II, the Legion was thought as very avant-garde, very progressive, you know, getting lay people to evangelize. After Vatican II, the very people that said it was ahead of its time were saying, "Oh, that's old-fashioned, you know, Latin terminology, it's out of date." So that was a cross for Frank Duff, especially how the liberal press said that the Vatican Council downgraded the Blessed Mother, which was a lie, because Vatican II even gave Our Lady a new title, the Mother of the Church. but Frank Duff was able to steer the Legion through the difficult times after Vatican II. So besides these crosses that Frank Duff carried, he also even did some penance and did some extra acts of sacrifice. For example, he joined the Pioneers in 1914. Everybody know what the Pioneers are? What? Right, the Abstinence Society. For those who give up alcohol out of reparation to the Sacred Heart for the sin of alcoholism. And as you know, the Irish like to have a little drink now and then. And the Irishman's seven-course meal is a potato and a six-pack. Have you heard that? Well, Frank Duff did this as an act of penance because he didn't like to be known as a Catholic in the early days, but he wore the badge to let people know he was a Catholic to try to overcome human respect, which is caring too much what other people think and not enough about what God thinks. I mentioned he went to Loch Derg every year for 49 years, beginning in 1915. He also lived a life of simplicity and frugality. For example, when the Philadelphia Legionaries went over to interview him, they spent many hours with Frank Duff doing videotaping sessions. And Frank Duff every day came wearing the same suit. And so they said, you know, Brother Duff, maybe you should wear different suits because people in the world are going to be thinking you only have one suit. He says, I actually only have one suit. But he was immaculate. He was always immaculate in the way he dressed. But he told my dad, Bill, I have 100 neckties. So every day he came wearing a different necktie to be videotaped. He also lived the life of simplicity because he never drove a car. He bicycled wherever he had to go, which probably kept him in great shape. And one occasion he did drive a car when he was a young man. He borrowed his brother's car and the engine exploded. He never drove again after that. He bicycled all over Ireland. But this simplicity, this way in which he really lived the gospel poverty was a kind of a cross or a penance that he willingly accepted. Now we look at the crosses that Adele Quinn had in her life. Anybody know what feast day she was born on? The Exaltation of the True Cross, September 14th. And that was really to be a hallmark of her life because she did have many crosses. Perhaps her greatest cross was not being able to enter the Poor Clares, even though she was accepted to the Belfast Convent, but she was stricken with tuberculosis, advanced tuberculosis. And so what she thought was her vocation, being a Poor Clare nun, was actually not the case. Her vocation truly was to be a Legion envoy. So you see how even though she had this cross, it was a blessing for her and eventually for the whole church. She spent 18 months in the sanatorium in Wicklow, which is a very cold, windy place. And she said she, when her Legion friends went down to visit her, they said they nearly froze to death. It was like being in an icebox. One other sort of cross that Adele Quinn had was that many men fell in love with her and proposed marriage to her. Her French employer was totally head over heels with her and asked her for a hand in marriage. And it was a cross because she was dedicated to God. Her heart was already given to Jesus, and she had to, in a sense, break some hearts, which was hard for her to do. Now, I'm not recommending all of you refuse all your marriage proposals, but she did. Another cross for her was leaving her family behind when she went to Africa because she knew she would never see them again. She confided to a friend that she was never coming back from Africa. She was going there, and she was not going to come back. And there was also great opposition among a lot of her friends to allow her to go to Africa. For example, one day Frank Duff was walking down the street and he ran across a friend of his named Mona McCarthy, who was one of Adele Quinn's best friends. He held out his hand to shake her hand, and she put her hands behind her back and said, "I will not shake your hands, for they are covered with blood." Because she was so upset that Frank Duff was sending Adele Quinn off to Africa. See, people did not even know if she was going to survive the boat ride, the journey to Africa. If she died along the way, Frank Duff said, well, she wants to go. She says that while she's being kept in Ireland, we're just sort of keeping her sitting up in a coffin. If she's going to die anyway, why not have her die and give her an envoy's crown or a martyr's crown? But Frank Duff received a lot of opposition to that, and Adele Quinn was very grateful to Frank Duff for giving her the support in going to Africa. But also in Africa, we see that there were great crosses she had to carry. For example, she contracted malaria, fevers, dysentery. She also suffered from pleurisy. The distances were incredible. Her territory was 1,000 miles by 700 miles. She had to deal with prejudice, tribal conflict, the difficulties in the languages, and also the oppressive tropical, not only diseases, but the oppressive heat, which a young girl from Ireland was not used to. And yet, even though she was only given probably 6 months to live, she survived almost 9 years in Africa. We look at Alfie Lamb's crosses now for a moment. He also, as a young boy, suffered from poor health. It was a heartbreaking experience for him to have to leave the Christian Brothers. He was devastated. When he left, he suffered from depression. He was sad. He was gloomy. And he just had no zest for life. But then he joined the Legion, and his energy returned. His cheerfulness returned, and he told his mother that he felt that God was going to use him to do more good in the world through the Legion than he could have ever done in any other way. Later in his life, we know he suffered from severe stomach pains, low blood pressure, amoebic dysentery, and when they opened him up before he died to try to see what was wrong with him, he was filled with cancer. He had a cancerous tumor in his stomach which had spread all throughout his body, so all he could do is sew him up and to realize he was going to die very soon. These were some of the crosses that he carried. Lastly, I want to spend a moment or two on their zeal for souls, okay? Their zeal for souls, their apostolic life. Now, this is based upon their oneness with Our Lady, their union with Our Blessed Mother. You see, when we look at it, true devotion to Mary obliges apostleship, as the handbook tells us. And the reason for that is, if you're going to be one with Our Lady primarily is a spiritual mother, then you also want to help convert souls and bring souls to God, because you'll be so united to Our Lady, you want all souls to go to heaven and to be with Jesus. So their apostolic life was an overflow of their true devotion and their union with our Lord and Our Lady. Frank Duffy, Delquin, and Alfie Lamb all were filled with the apostolic love of Christ. They had the apostolic heart of Christ and the Blessed Mother beating within them. Even as a young man, before Frank Duff joined the Legion, he was an apostle. He would go out and stand in front of the Protestant proselytizing dens. And these were places where the Protestants would offer Catholics a free breakfast if they would go in and listen to an anti-Catholic sermon during the breakfast. And Frank Duff would stand in front with his rosary beads. Does anybody know the nickname they gave him? The Madman of Dublin. That's what they called him. Because there he was, as an individual, before the Legion started, standing there praying his rosary, telling people not to go in to listen to the anti-Catholic sermon. What he would even do out of his own pocket, he arranged with a restaurant down the road to get vouchers, and he would give these men and women a voucher, and they could go down and have a breakfast by themselves in quiet and not have to listen to the anti-Catholic sermon. So this was the kind of apostolic zeal that Frank Duff had even from a young age. And then Bentley Place, a tremendous story which we're hearing about on this retreat, how within 4 years they closed down an entire red light district which was in existence for dozens and even hundreds of years in that particular locality, and about 250 to 300 women were eventually brought off the street and restored to their family, primarily because of the zeal of Frank Duff and the early Legion. But Frank Duff's zeal also was very strong in with the poor of Dublin. He helped to start Santa Maria Hostel and Morningstar Hostel and Regina Chaley, and he worked with these poor men and women. And Canon Ripley says that when you saw Frank Duff, when he would talk to a poor person, he was just so filled with love and sympathy and caring that the poor were so impressed by how much he cared about them. And later in his life, Frank Duff was to have, after the Legion started, his great desire was to convert the whole world. Now, do we have that desire? We should. Not just to convert Norristown or Philadelphia, or Frederick or Hagerstown, but to convert the entire world. Once Father McGrath was with Frank Duff, and even though Frank Duff didn't travel much, he had maps of almost every part of the world. He got out the maps of the Philippine Islands. This was in 1980, and he sat Father McGrath down on the floor, and he unrolled these maps, and he says, "Father, these islands, these 7,000 islands in Indonesia, have worried me my entire life." Now, do those islands worry you? Do they worry me? They should. If we're united to Our Lady, if we're one with the apostolic heart of Christ, we should be worried about the salvation of souls. That's when he sent Father to the Philippines to evangelize. Frank Duff also was an apostle through his writings, and God willing, hopefully he'll be one day a doctor of the church. For 40 years, he wrote articles in Maria Legionis every issue for 40 years. These are now published in his books. But Frank Duff also wrote 200,000 letters. Did you know that during his lifetime? And that's one of the things that's holding up his cause, because the postulator has to get all these letters, read through them to make sure there's no heresies in them. And that's why I told Mother Angelica, I said, if you want to become a saint, don't write too much. And speaking from her own experience, she said, no, if you want to become a saint, don't talk too much. But Frank Duff also corresponded with Muslims, Jehovah's Witnesses, and Mormons throughout the world to try to convert them. One Jehovah's Witness said that he had like 800 letters from Frank Duff over the course of his lifetime, and he could compile them in a book on the teachings of the Catholic faith. Frank Duff corresponded with Adele Quinn for 8 years while she was in Africa and wrote two letters a week to her. He also was Father McGrath's correspondent between 1947 and 1951 before Father was imprisoned in communist China, and he was his correspondent. So Frank Duff's apostolic life, his zeal for souls, not only was in evangelization but also through his writings and through his letters. And lastly, I want to just mention for a moment Edel Quinn's and Alfie Lam's zeal for souls. As soon as Edel Quinn joined the Legion, she began visiting the poor little old ladies, and she would sometimes spend 5 or 6 nights a week doing Legion assignments. She would not limit herself just to 2 hours. When she found that somebody needed food or clothing, she did not break the Legion's rule of giving them food or clothing, but she paid her brother a couple quarters, a couple nickels, to take food at night and place it on the doorsteps of these poor destitute people. That way they never knew it came from her. Even though Edel Quinn visited 5 or 6 nights a week, she once told her best friend that she didn't like visiting, and yet she did it so often. She eventually became an extension worker for a little while in England and Wales, and she even told Frank Duff she was going to move there and get a job and spend all her free time extending the Legion. But then the letter came from Bishop Heffernan in Africa, and she was sent there instead. And the amazing travels you can read about in Cardinal Suenen's book about Edel Quinn. Also, my mom's book on Edel Quinn has just recently been reprinted. And so I encourage you to read the life of Edel Quinn, and you'll see her apostolic zeal. Sometimes she had to travel for 20 hours by train just to meet with a bishop or with a priest. Sometimes she would attend a Presidium meeting covered in mud from head to toe because of the difficulties in getting there and traveling. And lastly, Alfie Lam's apostolic zeal. It was when he joined the Legion that he received this great zeal for souls. He became an extension worker, and he worked. He even moved to Dublin and offered himself to the Concilium, and they sent him visiting all the rural Presidium in Ireland. He was only 19 years old when he did this. He joined the Legion just 12 days after his 18th birthday. On one occasion, he rode his bicycle 10 miles to visit a pastor and ask him to start the Legion. The pastor said no. Alfie said, "Can I come back tomorrow and ask you again?" The priest says, "Well, if you want to, you can." Well, he traveled back 10 miles by bike. The next morning he got up, drove 10 miles in the pouring rain, knocked on the priest's door. The priest opened the door and saw Alfie standing there, drenched head to toe, and he says, "I have been conquered. I will start 2 Presidia of the Legion." Alfie was a genius at extension. He and Seamus Grace would train legionaries to do extension throughout Ireland. It's the same method he used in South America. He even would get new legionaries to do extension. Even after only being in the legion for 4 weeks, he would send them out doing extension. On one time, he started 25 presidia in 2 weeks. That was in South America. The Concilium was worried that the presidia were being established too quickly. For example, before long, there were 400 presidia in Ecuador because of this method. He even established 4 presidia among the leper colony, and when he spoke at a prison, he was able to start 4 presidia in a prison with 150 active members. 130 of the prisoners went to confession, and every prisoner attended Mass for the first time in the history of the prison. Alfie's apostolic zeal did not rest just in South America. He was studying Russian to go to Russia to become an envoy. And this would later inspire Father Bradshaw to do his work in Russia. And in 1956, he had the Legion Handbook translated into Russian, also into Romanian. He started a presidium among the Russian Orthodox in South America, and his great desire was to go as an envoy to Russia. But he died before he could do that. But that was the apostolic heart of Alfie Lam. When we look at the lives of these three individuals, we see that they changed history in so many ways. Frank Duff by founding the Legion, Adele Quinn by working in Africa, and Alfie Lam by working in South America. They all died holy deaths. Frank Duff is buried in Glasnevin Cemetery, Adele Quinn in Africa, in a cemetery reserved for religious brothers and priests, but she was allowed to be buried there. So even though she was unable to become a religious in life, she was given that privilege in death. And the same thing with Alfie Lam. Even though he was unable to stay a Christian brother, when he died in South America, a friend of his, a Christian brother, allowed him to be buried in the cemetery for the Christian brothers. So he also had the fulfillment of his vocation as well. So we as legionaries can become saints like Frank Duff, Adele Quinn, and Alfie Lam if we're just willing to follow the Legion system. Having a prayer life, an interior life, love for the Mass, love for the Eucharist, practicing the Montfort's true devotion, carrying the crosses that each one of us carries in life, and then by taking upon ourselves the apostolic heart of Christ. God bless you.